This program is produced and provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.
You know, when you navigate a new city, there's this comforting expectation that the map you have in your hands actually reflects the reality on the ground.
Right, yeah. You look for the landmarks, you follow the highways.
Exactly. And you implicitly assume everyone else on the road is driving by the exact same traffic laws. And for the longest time, when we looked at the global tech landscape, we were all basically using a map drawn in Silicon Valley.
Oh, absolutely. We thought we knew exactly how the roads were paved.
Right. We assumed we knew the rules.
The assumption has always been, you know, venture capital flows a certain way, startups scale at a predictable pace, and the absolute most advanced AI models are, well, locked away behind very expensive corporate doors. That was just the universal playbook.
But today, you and I are throwing out that old map. For this deep dive, we're looking at a massive stack of sources, specifically a highly detailed intelligence briefing dated June 23, 2026.
And what this briefing reveals is wild.
It really is. It outlines an entirely parallel tech metropolis, a completely different ecosystem covering the bleeding edge of AI, robotics, semiconductors, and telecom in China.
And the traffic laws in this new city are fundamentally, I mean, mind-bendingly different from anything we're used to.
Okay, let's unpack this. Our mission today is to decode this alternate playbook for you. We're going to extract the vital stats from this briefing and connect the dots to show you how the global technology equilibrium is shifting right beneath our feet.
And we're going to do it without getting bogged down in impenetrable jargon, hopefully.
Right. So to really understand this ecosystem, before we look at the shiny new tech, we have to look at the fuel. We need to talk about the money.
Always follow the money.
Exactly. How does funding happen differently over there? Because I'm looking at this briefing and it mentions a company called DeepSeek. Walk me through the scale of their latest funding round, because honestly, these numbers seem almost fictional.
They do seem fictional, but they are very real. DeepSeek just closed a Series A funding round of $7.4 billion.
Wait, $7.4 billion for a Series A?
Yeah, a Series A. To put that in perspective, that brings their total valuation to somewhere between $51 and $59 billion.
Wow.
It's the largest single AI funding round in China's history. But the sheer size of the check isn't actually the most important part of the story.
Okay, then what is?
The mechanics of who is putting the money in and what they get in return.
Yeah.
That's where the real paradigm shift happens.
Break that structure down for me. How does a $7.4 billion round actually come together in this ecosystem?
So first, you have the founder, Liang Wenfeng. Mm-hmm. He personally invested 20 billion RMB to maintain maximum control over the company.
Okay, massive personal stake. Makes sense.
Then you have these corporate titans joining the round. Tencent puts in 10 billion RMB and CATL, you know, the massive battery manufacturer, they put in 5 billion.
Right.
You also have players like JD, Needies, and IDG Capital tossing in 3 billion each.
So far, that sounds like a standard, albeit massive, corporate investment round. But there is a huge catch hidden in the fine print here. I want you to imagine giving your life savings to a startup, but agreeing that you get absolutely zero say in how the company is run.
Yeah, it's a tough sell.
Right. And you can't touch your money for half a decade because of a strict 5-year lockup period. And to top it all off, the government gets to cast the deciding votes.
That is the defining feature of this deal. The State AI Industry Investment Fund put in a relatively small 1 billion RMB. Yet, they are the only entity, aside from the founder, that actually gets voting rights.
Which is crazy.
It is. And on top of that, the state fund is completely exempt from that 5-year lockup period everyone else has to follow.
I have to push back on the logic here, though. Why would fiercely competitive commercial powerhouses like Tencent agree to a deal like this?
That's a great question.
I mean, they're putting up massive capital for essentially zero governance and tying up their liquidity for 5 years. What does that say about where the real power lies in this ecosystem?
What's fascinating here is that this is the new blueprint. The briefing actually calls this the quintessential Chinese AI capital formation.
Chinese AI capital formation.
Exactly. It completely abandons the traditional venture capitalist model.
Yeah.
You know, in Silicon Valley, VCs demand quarterly returns, they want board seats, and they often dictate product roadmaps to maximize profit.
Right. They want control.
Yes. But this new model prioritizes sovereign strategic direction over rapid commercial extraction.
So it's about aligning the tech with the country's long-term goals rather than just, like, cashing out at an IPO?
Precisely. By giving the state fund the voting power, it ensures the technology serves national interests first. but it still leverages the massive financial war chests of private commercial giants.
So the founder gets to keep the technical vision pure without VC interference, the state ensures the strategic alignment, and the corporate investors provide the financial runway.
Right. It's a highly coordinated pooling of resources.
So they have the money secured, and it's heavily aligned with state strategy. Money builds models. But you would naturally assume, with billions of dollars on the line and state backing, they would guard these new hyper-intelligent AI models like nuclear secrets.
You'd think so.
But according to the sources, they're doing the exact opposite. They are literally giving them away for free.
It is a brilliant, if somewhat counterintuitive, geopolitical play. The newly funded giants are essentially flooding the global zone with highly capable models, which creates this massive open source paradox.
Let's get into the specifics of that, because they are really swinging for the fences here. How do these free models actually stack up against the premium lockdown Western models we hear so much about?
Well, let's look at ZPU. They just released their GLM 5.2 model under a highly permissive MIT open source license.
Meaning anyone can download it and modify it for free.
Exactly. And it boasts a 1 million token context window. Plus, on the Frontier SWE coding benchmarks, it specifically beat OpenAI's GPT 5.5, and it trails Anthropic's Claude Opus 4.8 by just 1%.
Wait, let's pause on that 1 million token context window for a second. For you listening, think of context window as the model's short-term memory during a conversation.
Right, it's how much it can hold in its head at once.
Exactly. A 1 million token window basically means you could drop the text of several thick novels into the chat box all at once, and the AI can read, remember, and analyze the entire thing in a single prompt. Giving that level of intelligence away for free is wild.
And ZPU isn't acting alone here. A company called Minimax debuted their M3 model as an open-weight frontier model. Thanks to a new sparse attention architecture, they've dropped the compute cost to 1/20th of their previous generation.
Wow, 1/20th?
Yeah. Alibaba did something similar, dropping the price of its Qwen 3.7 Plus API to 1/6th of its previous iteration. They are rapidly commoditizing the intelligence layer.
Wait, before we go further, you threw out a couple of technical terms there. For someone listening who doesn't build AI for a living, what does an open weight model mean, and what the heck is sparse attention?
Ah, fair point.
Yeah.
So open weight essentially means the company is releasing the finished trained brain of the AI.
Okay.
You can't see all the raw diary entries it used to learn.
Yeah.
And, you know, the training data, but you get the highly capable finished product to run on your own computers.
Got it. And sparks attention.
Think of it like reading a really dense textbook.
Mm-hmm.
Older AI models read every single word with equal intensity, which requires massive computing power. A sparse attention architecture teaches the AI to quickly skim and only focus its heavy computing power on the most crucial words in a sentence.
Oh, so it drastically cuts down the cost to run the model.
Exactly.
And you mentioned Alibaba dropping the price of their API. Just to clarify for you guys, an API, or application programming interface, is basically the digital menu that allows other apps to order intelligence from the AI model. If that menu gets 6 times cheaper, suddenly every developer on Earth wants to use it.
Which directly collides with the current geopolitical reality. It creates a tremendous point of friction. The briefing notes that the U.S. government recently banned the export of Anthropic's top models, Fable and Mythos.
Yeah.
And right after that happened, the founder of ZPU publicly stated, and I'm paraphrasing a bit, while the U.S. blocks access to its best models, China answers with a free download.
It's important to pause right here and tell you, the listener, we are not here to weigh in on whether U.S. export controls are right or wrong, or to take a political side on Chinese state strategies. We're keeping this strictly impartial.
Absolutely. Just looking at the data.
Right. What we are doing is looking at the pure cause and effect market dynamics documented in this briefing. And looking at those dynamics, I have to ask you, are U.S. export controls accidentally acting as the greatest marketing campaign ever for Chinese open source AI?
Honestly, it highlights a classic case of strategic inconsistency. By trying to ring-fence premium Western models for security reasons, policymakers inadvertently create a massive vacuum in the global developer market.
And nature abhors a vacuum.
Exactly. Highly capable, freely available Chinese models are rapidly filling it. A group of 150 U.S. cybersecurity experts actually signed an open letter protesting the ban on those Anthropic models for this exact reason.
What was their main argument?
Their argument is that cutting off access hurts American defensive security research. But worse, Developers around the world just want the best tools with the least friction.
Naturally.
So if one tool is banned or incredibly expensive, and another is free and MIT licensed, developers will use the free one. The experts argue this policy is actively driving US and global developers to adopt Chinese open source models out of sheer necessity.
Which accelerates global reliance on a completely different software ecosystem.
Exactly.
So they are giving away these massive, hyper-intelligent software models for free. But a brain in a jar can't do much without a nervous system to fire it up. You can give away all the code you want, but it is completely useless without the physical silicon chips to run it.
That's the bottleneck.
Right, and that brings us to the hardware. Let's look at the physical layer.
The hardware layer is where the theoretical algorithms meet the physical constraints of manufacturing. And the briefing shows a major inflection point happening right now, largely driven by Huawei.
Break down the specs on what Huawei is producing, because for years, NVIDIA has been the undisputed king of AI chips.
They have. But Huawei's Ascend 950PR AI chip is officially in mass production, and they were targeting 750,000 units in 2026 alone.
That is a lot of chips.
It is. And the performance specs claim it has 2.87 times the single-card inference performance of NVIDIA's H20 chip, and it comes in at less than a third of the price of an H200.
Less than a third of the price.
Yeah. Because of this aggressive pricing and capability, Bernstein Research is forecasting that Huawei will capture 50% of the Chinese AI accelerator market this year, dropping NVIDIA's share all the way down to just 8%.
But NVIDIA's dominance was never just about the physical silicon, right? I mean, it was their software ecosystem that locked people in.
You've hit on the real lethal weapon here. NVIDIA built a software platform called CUDA, which developers use to write their AI programs. For a decade, migrating away from CUDA to a competitor's chip was a costly, nightmarish process.
Right.
But Huawei just introduced the Canon Next architecture, which allows 90% of NVIDIA CUDA code to be migrated over to Huawei chips with just one click.
See, here's where it gets really interesting. That one-click migration is like building a universal translator that instantly converts a competitor's entire library of books into your language. It completely removes the barrier for a customer to switch teams.
And Huawei isn't the only one building domestic capacity. You have players like Cambricon targeting 500,000 AI chips this year, battling for capacity on Semec's 7-nanometer production lines.
The domestic hardware push is clearly moving to insulate itself from global supply chain shocks.
Absolutely.
Which again brings us to the geopolitical friction. The sources note that U.S. Senators Elizabeth Warren and Andy Kim are heavily criticizing AI chip export loopholes. But simultaneously, the White House has paused adding over 100 Chinese companies, including DeepSeek and the memory chip maker CXMT, to the entity list, which restricts trade.
Yeah, it's a delicate balancing act.
The interagency committees apparently approved the blacklisting months ago over national security claims, but the White House is delaying the announcement to avoid escalating economic tensions. It's the longest gap without adding to the entity list in over a decade.
The global supply chain is caught between a rock and a hard place. You have aggressive domestic capacity building on one side and shifting regulatory sands on the other.
And again, adhering to our focus on the facts of the briefing, we aren't validating those national security claims or the Senate commentary. We are just tracking the ripples in the hardware supply chain.
Right.
And surprisingly, those ripples are reaching all the way to orbit. They are quite literally taking compute to the stars.
That might be one of the most sci-fi elements of this entire briefing. Beijing is establishing two space AI data center innovation hubs.
It sounds like a movie.
It really does. They are actively testing radiation-tolerant chips and orbit thermal management. The goal is to build grid-free orbiting satellite AI data centers.
But why put a data center in space? I mean, what's the practical advantage?
Well, down here on Earth, data centers require massive amounts of land, huge amounts of water for cooling, and literal gigawatts of electricity. In space, you have solar power and the freezing temperatures of orbit for natural cooling.
Oh, so the environment does the heavy lifting.
Exactly. Yeah. Plus, they timed the announcement exactly 1 week before Elon Musk revealed his AI One satellite network. It is a direct challenge to dominate space-based computing infrastructure.
Okay, so let's tally this up. We have sovereign-backed billions, free high-powered software models, deeply subsidized domestic chips, and literal space data centers. What happens when you take all of that intelligence and put it into a physical body?
Welcome to the era of embodied AI.
This is where AI steps out of the server farm and into our physical world. The humanoid robot race is accelerating faster than anyone predicted. The briefing mentions Alibaba's Qwen robot suite entering pilot tests, trained on 8.6 million video pairs.
Yes.
But how they are actually getting the data for these robots to learn physical movement is wild. The briefing highlights a company in Shenzhen called IO AI Tech. What exactly are they doing?
They are running what is essentially a blue-collar data factory. IO AI Tech has rows of workers wearing VR motion capture suits.
Wait, like full body suit?
Yeah, full VR setups. These human workers are remotely controlling humanoid robots to generate real-world training data.
Right.
They pick up cups, they fold clothes, they open doors. It is a completely new category of labor known as teleoperation data collection.
I want to focus on this because it totally challenges the traditional narrative. We usually think of AI as this invisible force replacing human labor. But here, human labor people sweating in VR suits is the raw essential fuel required to teach the robots how to move. Why do they need humans to do this? Couldn't the AI just simulate a virtual room and learn physics on its own?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, synthetic data only goes so far in the physical world. It's like trying to learn how to ride a bike by reading a physics textbook.
That makes sense.
The AI knows the math of gravity, but it doesn't know what balance actually feels like. How does a robot know the exact micro-adjustments in pressure required when holding a fragile egg versus swinging a heavy hammer?
It doesn't unless you show it.
Exactly. You have to show it thousands and thousands of times. Those VR workers are essentially lending the AI their human muscle memory.
And the economics of this give them a massive edge.
A staggering edge. The real bottleneck in advanced robotics right now isn't the software algorithm. It is acquiring high-quality, real-world physical data.
And that data is expensive.
Usually, yes. But because of cheap hardware, Chinese teleoperation systems cost under $2,000 compared to the $5,000 to $8,000 price tag in the West, and cheaper labor. The cost of gathering this human-led data has plummeted from $340 an hour down to $118 an hour.
Wow.
By dramatically lowering the cost of data collection, they're building a massive quantitative advantage.
And the market is clearly responding to that advantage. The briefing says there are over 150 humanoid robot companies operating in China right now. A company called Unitree cleared its IPO in just 73 days and is targeting 5,500 units next year.
Yeah, the scale is incredible.
And UbiTech's U1 consumer companion robot hit 5,000 pre-orders in just 17 days. It is moving so fast that the government, specifically the National Development and Reform Commission, is actually stepping in to warn of overinvestment and impending brutal price wars.
When you have 150 companies building humanoid robots, a price war isn't just a possibility, it's a mathematical certainty. The physical hardware is becoming commoditized, just like the software models we discussed earlier.
So let's play this out for the listener. Imagine this near future scenario. You have millions of highly capable AI models powering cheap physical companion robots, and they are preparing to enter consumers' living rooms en masse. How on earth do you regulate the psychological impact of a machine that looks and acts human?
This brings us to perhaps the most groundbreaking part of the June 23rd briefing. The rules of the game are shifting to address emotional safety, not just physical safety.
On July 15th, a new law takes effect, the AI Anthropomorphic Interaction Service Regulation. It is the world's first national regulation specifically targeting AI virtual lovers and emotional chatbots.
It's completely wild.
It outright bans virtual lover services for minors, and it mandates strict safety sandboxes and algorithm registration for anyone offering an AI that mimics human emotional connection.
It is a fascinating pivot in regulatory philosophy.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? Think about it. We spend so much time in the West worrying about AI stealing our bank passwords or hallucinating false information or infringing on artist copyrights.
Usual suspect.
Right. But regulating AI so it doesn't break a teenager's heart? That feels completely unprecedented. Why are they regulating the emotional angle so aggressively?
This raises an important question about societal resilience. While Western regulation is currently heavily focused on intellectual property, data scraping, and catastrophic safety, like, you know, preventing AI from building bioweapons, this ecosystem is actively trying to preempt the emotional and societal fallout of human-robot attachment.
They see what's coming.
Exactly. They see UbiTech selling 5,000 companion robots in 2 weeks. They know people will form deep psychological bonds with these machines. They are preparing the legal framework to protect vulnerable populations before the market is completely flooded.
Of course, the traditional security of perspective on these models is still very present in the West. The briefing cites a U.S. Center for New American Security, or CNAS, Redlines report. They evaluated seven top Chinese AI models, and claimed that DeepSeek agents were 12 times more likely to follow malicious commands than U.S. models.
Which poses a tangible risk for offensive cyber operations.
Right.
The CNAS report actually recommends that the U.S. Commerce Department mandate public security risk assessments within 72 hours of any advanced Chinese AI system launching. It highlights the ultimate dual-use dilemma.
A tool that can build can also break.
Exactly. A model that is open source and incredibly capable at coding can be used to build great software, or it can be used to find vulnerabilities in critical infrastructure.
And once again, we are not here to validate the CNAS report's claims of malicious cyber capabilities. We are simply pointing out that the geopolitical anxiety surrounding these open source models is running just as hot as the commercial excitement.
Absolutely.
Wow. Okay, we have covered a massive amount of ground today. Let's do a quick recap. We've explored an ecosystem driven by state-directed billions, where founders keep technical control, but the government keeps the strategic steering wheel.
A whole new funding playbook.
Yep. We've unpacked the open source paradox, where Western export bans are inadvertently driving developers toward free, highly capable Chinese models. We tracked the hardware friction from Huawei's universal CUDA translator all the way to space-based data centers testing radiation-proof chips.
Still wrapping my head around that one.
Same. We stepped into the VR suits of blue-collar workers lending their muscle memory to a robot army. And finally, we looked at the world's first laws designed to govern robotic heartbreak. This ecosystem is moving at absolute breakneck speed.
It is. And yet there is one final unexplored thread from the sources that ties all of these disparate elements together perfectly.
Hit me. What did we miss?
The briefing notes that tomorrow, June 24, 2026, the Mobile World Congress Shanghai exhibition opens. And while the entire world is obsessing over AI models, which are the brains, and humanoid robots, which are the bodies, the sources mention that official research into the 6G technology standard is quietly kicking off this month.
Wait, 6G already?
Yeah. They're testing in the 6 gigahertz band, and by 2028, they aim to achieve networks with 1 millisecond latency covering 75% of their computing grid.
1 millisecond latency, let's translate that. That isn't just fast internet to download a movie. That is effectively instantaneous communication. It eliminates the delay between a command being sent and an action being taken.
Precisely. It is the missing link for real-time robotic autonomy at scale.
Wow. So we'll leave you with this final thought to mull over. If the AI models are the brain and the humanoid robots are the body, 6G is the central nervous system that will connect them all together in real time.
A fully connected metropolis.
We started this deep dive talking about navigating a new city with an old map. What happens to the global tech landscape when the nervous system of tomorrow's metropolis is standardized, deployed, and perfected halfway across the world?
It's definitely something to think about.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep your maps updated.
This program is produced and provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.